property as opposed to continuing to rent in the places where they live. For some, though, being able to own property continues to be a challenge, and so it becomes a feasible option for them to consider co-owning the property, either with a fellow family member. There's a very growing popularity now of what's called intergenerational ownership of property, or a partner, as in somebody that they're not married to necessarily, but somebody they're intending to enjoy a lifelong partnership with. They're buying properties together, or friends are buying properties together. What should you consider in buying property, in buying property alongside a friend, a family member, for joint ownership? Danoon Sampson is a founding member of the Danoon Sampson Dlovu, joins me on the line now. Danoon, a very good morning and welcome to the show.
Good morning. Good morning. Great to talk to you.
Are you finding that this is becoming a growing, I suppose, and more feasible option for many people who can't afford properties, particularly in areas where they want to live, where they're now jointly owning property with either family members, their life partners, or their friends?
Yes, it's very, very common. It always has been very common, particularly between two unmarried people. Sometimes they are going out together and they later become married, but there seems to be a new trend that family members as a group buy a single property and share it in different ownerships. That's exactly right. And one of the other things to notice is that with individuals, it becomes really a sort of a temporary arrangement because, you know, life changes, people get married and they go off or they get transferred. And one of the very common things that we face all day, or every very commonly, is people wish to undo their co-ownership relationship. So a good agreement is very, very necessary, and one needs to understand a whole lot of things and agree with each other. But what is important is how do you undo it later on?
Let's talk about that agreement then first, Danoon, because if you have a good and solid and clear agreement in place, it often will spell out what happens when the relationship no longer exists for whatever reason. So in entering an agreement, Danoon and Africa have decided to buy the 170 million rand Clifton property in Cape Town because that's the only way we can afford it. What do we need to ensure is in that agreement, Danoon?
Well, yes, it's very, very important because, you know, invariably there's one party that's going to contribute more to the property or to the transfer cost up front. And so, generally speaking, it is very appropriate that one party has the decisive decision-making power and you put that in the agreement. So, you know, it's really unusual that they say, well, yeah, we're each going to pay 50% of the bond. And now we're going to be owning it 50-50. If you own it 50-50 and you have a dispute between each other, how do you resolve it? Because they've got each equal decision-making power. So what we would normally do is put in the agreement that the person who contributes the most to the property or contributes the most towards the bond installments every month will get a larger share. They will agree that that person, for instance, might be registered as a 60% share owner in the agreement.
And if they are a 60% share owner, Danoon, it means that they are 60% liable for all debt, I suppose, and maintenance of that property, right? So 60% of the bond, 60% of the rates and services, 60% of the insurance, and so forth and so forth.
That would generally be the agreement, but there's a trap, I suppose. One should take notice that when if the two of them together, because they're both joint owners, they will both have to be borrowers under the bond. So if they both take out a mortgage bond together as one single entity over the property, they should understand that despite having a private agreement between themselves, for instance, one is only going to pay 40%, the banks will not accept that. Because when you sign a mortgage bond agreement, if they're two parties, three or four, there's a special clause in the bank's agreement that says the ownership will be jointly and severally liable. So it means that the banks do not have to worry about the one saying, look, I'm only going to pay my bond installment at 40%. The banks have this agreement that they can take the full bond installment from either one of them, regardless of the other. So the one can't protest and say, well, look, you know, I'm only agreed to pay 40%. That falls away, or the banks will ignore the agreement. because agreement, a co-ownership agreement, is a private arrangement that will not avail against banks or third parties.
What happens in a situation where Dunoon and Africa, once again, and I, in a joint ownership agreement, I default? I simply don't make enough money this month to be able to put up my 40% of the share of the bond. What happens in that situation?
Well, that actually becomes quite common, because then the banks will say, listen, guys, we want our full bond installment. We don't care, if one of you is a bit short. So we've had it in the past where there were three joint owners. You know, they bought it in 33% shares, and the one guy couldn't make it. And I think the other two couldn't afford to make up the balance. So the bank just uses its mortgage bond to go to court and to sell it off at in a sale and execution, meaning that some other guy buys the property and those three people have to move out.
And unfortunately, a negative mark against all three parties then is realized, right? Not just the one person who... This is in terms of their credit record.
That's for sure. They would both get a bad adverse credit record. One of the points is, you know, although it's really important to have a co-ownership agreement between each other, I mean, you've got to understand that the law says, well, look, you know, if the two of you want to own this motor vehicle, there is no legal basis to say that only one of them owns the engine and the front seat and the other one owns the boot and the back seat. The whole thing is that the two of you own the car together, and so therefore you are jointly and severally liable, you are joined at the hip. But privately, you can have an arrangement, or you can say, look, this person only is going to occupy the whole property. The other co-owner doesn't need to occupy. So there's lots of flexibility to agree, and it's really essential to agree between the parties, these arrangements between each other. Like you could say that one person is going to pay all the groceries, pay the rates and taxes, the other one's going to pay the mortgage bond installment. But the bank doesn't care about that. It says, we just want our full bond installment from whoever can afford it, and we'll take it. And I've experienced that with various clients.
Now, every time a bond is taken out, it's now become custom that life insurance will certainly be taken out in that almost comes to the amount of the debt, if you like, of the property, so that if anything happens to that bond or the person who's paying that bond, at least there's an insurance against that. How does one negotiate or navigate that in a joint co-ownership scenario?
Well, the banks, as a lending requirement, very often will say, look, the two of you together must take out some sort of life insurance to cover the shortfall should one person die or become disabled. There's a unique type of policy that is called mortgage bond protection insurance, which basically means that if you just don't pay your bond, it'll be paid off, for instance, by means of the insurance policy. So the bank gets all its money, the bond is now paid off, and the two people can live happily ever after in the property. So insurance is really important. But what we see is quite often people buy the property, they use all their resources, and they're very stretched, and sometimes they just refuse to take out insurance, although we advise them to. But quite often it's a condition of the mortgage lender that they must have insurance, and that's what very often happens.
What happens in a situation where I can't stand you anymore, Dunoon, and I absolutely want to get out of our joint co-ownership? We would need to have spelled it out quite clearly, wouldn't we, in our agreement, what happens when there's a dissolution of this agreement?
Yeah, absolutely. We had this example of two young ladies bought a flat in Sandton. They registered it as each earning 50% share. And, two people, you know, life is dynamic. They grow apart. They were friends. Maybe one got married or had a boyfriend. So the reason why they wanted to split this arrangement was that the one lady did not keep her half of the fridge clean, neat, and tidy. So they had this ongoing dispute. And the real dispute became as to... And so in the background, this flat became extremely valuable in Sandton. So they both wanted to become the full owner of it and to remain there. But they couldn't decide which one was going to transfer the half share to the other, so that the remaining lady would become the full owner. So you know, there's a dispute. So if they went to court, you know, it's costly, it takes a lot of time. The courts would decide what would happen on the basis of fairness and equity given the circumstances. If they can't agree and, you know, then one of them says, well, I'm not going to pay the bond anymore, or the other one says, I refuse to pay the rents and taxes, the banks will basically say, well, you better pay your bond installment. If you don't, we'll sell it off at an auction. And so in the agreement of co-ownership, one can stipulate, and this is a clause that we put in, that if the two parties can't agree which one will become the full owner, they agree that it will be sold off on the normal market on a private charter, and that we also put in a formula that the person who basically paid in the most towards the investment will get the same proportion on return of the proceeds. So that's very important stipulations in a co-ownership agreement.
Indeed. Danoon, thank you very much for your insights and reflections on this. Danoon Sampson, founding member of Danoon Sampson Global, reflecting with us, I suppose, things you need to consider.